All right, welcome to the Refinery, episode number 6, July 22nd. This is Leslie. I'm with the Conservative Union. We've got our regulars, JD and Felicia with Free Radical Network, and we have a guest joining us today, John Pierre Maley with the Political Informer. And we're going to talk about whatever comes to the top of our heads. John Pierre, tell us a little bit about yourself.
I'm 19. I run the Political Informer, as you said. I also go to college at Patrick Henry College up in Virginia, and that's a college around 400 students at most. And let's see, what else do I do? I work at Belk's in the shoe department. That's about
And that's just your summer job.
Yes.
I confess to having never heard of Patrick Henry College. I mean, I've heard of Patrick Henry. He's obviously one of that's he's one of those old guys that wears those funny hats. But that what's that college known for?
It's a conservative Christian college, at least that's how they label themselves. And they actually have several good, like a lot of people that have come out of that college have gone into like high positions, like in for one, like somebody got into a high position in National Geographic, and they've been like aides to campaigns and stuff like that.
Oh, excellent.
And they're like 2 hours from DC, so there's a lot of opportunities there.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. So are you studying political science or history or what?
I'm deciding either political theory or government. Just depends on what each one has, what each major has in store.
And you'll probably change majors a couple of times. I mean, I think that's what most people do. And the other thing we all just learned about John Pierre, the first name is French and the last name is Persian. And there's Polish in there too. So you like the rest of us, it's, total mix of, are you a first generation American or were your parents born and raised here? It's just a multiple generations back.
My dad was born and raised in Iran, and also France, so he moved between the two places. My mom was born in America. No, actually, she was born in Spain, but her dad was a military, like an Air Force engineer, so they moved around a lot. So I guess she's a several generation American. My dad, however, is not.
Well, that's pretty cool. That's pretty cool. You get the background of France and Iran. Okay, I just got a message from T, and she. Oh, well, okay, no, that's actually Ryan. Why did it show T on me on my thing, on my computer? I'm learning how to read. Let's see. Ryan says he got stuck in a work meeting. Boo, work. Won't be able to join for about 30 minutes, and wants me to try and call his phone number in about 10. So he can join by phone on the drive home. So we might have a phone joiner person. And I'm going to message him back if he will send me his phone number.
I actually have a question, John. What was it that got you sort of interested enough to start your own blog, and how has that process been?
I started my blog. Okay, the current blog that I have now is actually a new creation as of last summer, but I've been blogging about politics for, I'm gonna say since I was either 14 or 15,
Good
and
Lord.
yeah, I started
14 or 15, I was like, how does eyeshadow work?
early. Yes. And you're all, I'm going to blog about politics. Yeah, right? I'm so inferior. Did you ever find out how eyeshadow worked? Because if
Oh,
so,
I'm
we need to
still
talk.
trying. I gave up, actually.
But what really got you into it, and got you involved? What was is it just your family? You've always been interested?
I think it was a combination of getting into politics early and also finding out I could write. Like, I actually like to write. So I think it was a combination of that, and I wanted just to write and get some stuff out there. And also, like, I started off listening to Glenn Beck. Like, that's really what got me hooked, and then from there I just branched out. So listening to him, and I just like all this like rush of information that I'd never even heard before, and I had to get it out somehow because I couldn't keep ranting to my parents. So
right.
And my friends thought I was crazy a little bit. So I just decided I just started a Blogspot blog and just started writing. And then as it progressed, I got more into it and whatnot.
That's a really good, an interesting point that you bring up, that your friends thought that you were kind of crazy. How is that, being a millennial and having a blog and having these kinds of opinions at such a young age, and what was the reaction from your peers? I mean, that had to have been tough.
It was a little bit. It's more like the little things, not like, you know, it's not like they all ganged up on me at one point or anything. It was mostly just, like, now I'm known as the political kid or whatever, you know, the friend, that friend who's into politics, and sometimes my friends will ask me about stuff, but...
No, the reason why I react like that is we're all that
friend. We're that
friend.
One, yes. Yeah.
We're that, collectively, we are all that one friend, so yes, I feel your pain.
Yeah, so I never really had anybody to really talk about it. So that's why I really gravitated towards Google Plus and Twitter really fast, was because I didn't know anybody who really cared enough to talk about politics in the level on the level that I was on. So, yeah, and whenever I bring it up, even when I bring it up now, everybody just gets quiet, or they try to make a joke at me. They're like, will you stop it with your stupid political crap? You know, they respect me for it, but, you know, we're friends, so we joke around. A few of my friends will ask me about stuff, usually my more closer friends who actually want to hear about it. It wasn't until 11th grade that I found a kid who was actually on my same level of political no, and he was actually an... He actually is an anarcho-capitalist.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. But he's an awesome guy, and we will literally have four-hour discussions in Starbucks about issues. So right now...
We're better to have a discussion with an anarcho-capitalist than at a Starbucks. That is, that's pretty awesome.
That's so awesome, isn't it? The center of capitalism where you have to sit and follow the rule. Dude!
I wonder what those people think of us when we're talking in there about, like, police states and, like, rights and all this stuff. They're probably like, what the heck? Are they smoking?
Uh-huh.
All the hipsters are going, whoa.
Hey.
Can I get some? That's probably the prevailing thought is, can I get some?
Yeah.
Yeah, so that's really my only friend that I talk a lot about politics with. And it was funny, in the beginning, me and him clashed a lot just because our beliefs were so different. But over time, we kind of decided and figured out that we agreed on a lot more issues than we differed on. And so we just clung to that. And so now we just discuss issues and theories and stuff. At college, I found two guys that were, actually, there's a lot of people there that will more willingly talk politics with you just because it's a politically oriented college. Mm-hmm. But even there, people are kind of like, dude, shut up. What are you talking about? Or like if a political discussion erupts in the middle of the table at the cafeteria, people are like, oh, crap, we're getting out. yeah, they'd like run. So two of the guys I'm rooming with next semester, they're into politics too. One of them used to be a libertarian. Now they're both theonomists, which is like cringing.
They're both what?
Theonomists.
What is that?
A theonomy, it's God's law rules is law. So, like, take Levitical law and make it criminal law.
Whoa.
Yeah, it's crazy.
They went from libertarianism to that?
Yeah, he went from those two. He went from libertarianism to that in the span of 3 weeks. So I'm kind of a little skeptical at him about that, because I'm like, yeah, nobody changes their beliefs that quickly from something that's like total freedom to freedom for only certain people, unless you cross this boundary, which is usually gays. So I'm still skeptical of that. I'm like,
Yeah, you know, in college and, you know, in youth is when we all try on different hats. And if you're a political person, you're going to try on different political leanings. And if you're into religion, you know, this month I'm going to be Buddhist and next month I'm going to be Taoist. And then the month after that, I'm going to be Hindu because I'm learning it. And when I learn it, I fall in love with it. And then I learn the next thing, and that's really cool, and I fall in love with that too. And then I learn something new and choose that to be the right thing. And, you know, and in older people, it becomes hypochondria because we learn about medical illnesses and every medical illness, oh, I have that. And then you read about, oh, I have that.
It's not just that same exact – WebMD is pretty much the devil.
Probably, yeah.
I'm fairly certain of that.
And I think that phenomenon is what happens with kind of any topic that you're deep into. You know, if you're studying all the theories of geological discoveries, whoever you happen to be studying, you know, he's the guy who was all completely right and you're on his side. And then you read the next discoverer and you go, oh, no, he's the right one. So yeah, I'm guessing your theonomy guy next semester he'll be a liberal, and then the semester after that, maybe cycle back to being a libertarian.
Well, what's funny is that the I have three roommates next year, and two of them are theonomists. Well, one of them converted the other, so I'm like, it wasn't even like a professor that converted them or anything. It was just another one of their friends just finally, like they said they had a come to Jesus moment. I'm just call bull on that, but.
Yeah, yeah, that sounds to me like just what friends do when they, like, you know, when you, what your friends like, you like hanging with your friends, so you're going to pick up on their, oh, you're into football? Okay, I'm into football too. Oh, you're into theonomy? Okay, I'll be into theonomy. But I'd never really heard of theonomy before, so that's new.
I was just hanging with the kids who like shoes.
Yeah.
Drama, you know.
Yeah, there you go.
In college, I was worthless.
Oh, Fishy, this whole new camera thing, this backdrop that you've got going, that's really special.
Yeah, no, it's just because there's so much crap in my garage, I had to cover it up to use the camera.
No, it actually looks pretty cool. You're preparing for your whole new commercial filming career thing that you've got going.
Yes.
Okay, I'm gonna see if I can call Ryan.
I'm gonna call Ryan.
I don't know how I've never done this before, so this is me gonna try. Should I? I don't know if I can try it as me, or if I have to do it as the
Conservative Union.
That's a challenge because the Conservative Union is a computer that doesn't have a camera or a microphone.
Right.
So
that might be tough.
Mm-hmm. Okay, if I send an invite, that's to name, circles, or email addresses. Where's the way to add somebody by phone?
I have no idea. This is Google Plus. It's like.
Oh, and I'm supposed to be the expert? Damn it.
You are supposed to be the expert.
Right?
I didn't study for this.
Man.
Okay, I'm going to try just dialing a phone number in there.
Hey, shh. Mute yourself. Don't be giving out people's phone numbers.
I know. I just realized that. I'm going to mute myself. Bye.
We are so professional.
Well, I mean, this is our sixth show, so we must be getting it by now. John, you know, what issues really are, on your radar? What is your main, is there anything that you're focused on with your blog?
Well, right now I've been focusing on individual freedom and really trying to communicate that to people. So I've taken a few cues from, like, you guys talking and everything and articles you send out, and then just building on my own stuff. So it's been a combination of that, and also just Twitter conversations help too with liberals. So I have like a few liberals that I follow that are kind of like my guinea pigs. And so I try to like build a relationship with them and be nice to them and whatnot. and work on that. So usually that's my project nowadays and my key focus.
No, that's very interesting and something that we really are proponents of. It's good to not just surround yourself with yourself and have some liberal friends and people that don't think like you to bounce stuff off of, you know, get some opinions back from. It's very helpful in crafting messages.
I find Google Plus is really good about that too. For me, it's much more diverse than my Facebook, and although I use a lot of lists on Twitter, people are so much more able to be personal on Google Plus. So, I mean, I imagine that you aren't just reaching out to people on Twitter, but you've probably got a pretty good Google Plus following.
I do. I haven't reached out that much to people of differing like opinions and whatnot on Google Plus yet. I've been mostly just focusing on Twitter for now, just because it's easier for me to find a few people here and there. And on Google Plus, I've been focusing on other things. So, I need to find those people, but yeah, it's kind of a project that I'm going to be working on soon.
Gotcha. It would probably be a good idea to ask you what your Twitter is, just so that everybody can follow it and do that, you know, that fun stuff.
Oh yeah, it's at John Pierre Maley. So my name just in there.
And it'll be in the links at the end of the, you know, once this goes up on YouTube and we have a chance to, you know, insert links and do all of that fun stuff, we'll have it there. So be sure to follow him. If you're not following him, then follow him and follow everybody else too, because it's important and good and stuff.
Yeah.
Twitter, it's important. We need to do these things. Have social media working full blast. Speaking of social media, I mean, this is the new frontier of politics. And aside from just talking to liberals and throwing ideas around there, I want to know about your friends. Where do they get their news? Is it really social media based? Where do you get your news?
For me, I use Feedly, and so I have a few websites that I follow. The main ones are TheBlaze.com and Breitbart, just because they send out a ton of articles every day, so if I need to find something, it's there.
Oh my gosh, with them in your Feedly, if you go away for a few hours, you come back, it's like 400 new articles.
Like, yeah. Breitbart gets to 900 in like 3 days. So.
I know, yeah, it's insane.
I usually focus on The Blaze a little more. Sometimes I pick out articles in Google Plus. It just depends what it is. I also follow fee.org, Mises.org, and Cato for like economic stuff. And then what else? Oh, I follow Reason TV or Reason.com. And then I have the Conservative Union in there too, and Free Radical Network. So,
which has been, is that still down? Have you guys gotten your website
back? Free Radical Network is still down.
Oh, no.
Server host got like lots of bad stuff happened. So we have a lot of the files, so it should be coming back up pretty soon, hopefully. We have people working on it as we speak. So that's hopefully that'll get resolved pretty quick.
The hamsters are running wildly in a little.
The tech gnomes are at it. Yes.
Good. Good, because that when on my feed reader, I don't use Feedly, I use InnoReader, and on mine when Free Radical Network, was it yesterday or day before? I think it was day before yesterday that it died.
Yeah, it was Sunday. Very, very late in the evening Sunday.
Yeah, I saw the on my feed reader, it shows Free Radical Network with the big X. I'm like, oh no, what happened? And it's just been gone. Just gone. But it did inspire me to go to theconservativeunion.net.
Back up all of the things.
Install the WordPress plugin to do backups, and then also figure out, and I'd had that installed before where it was doing a backup every day, but it was just putting the backup on my same server. I set it now so that my backups are copied to Dropbox every day, because I just do not want to take a risk. So, you know.
Yeah, that's not good.
Give me the opportunity to learn at your expense.
Yeah, not going to lie, I'm a little shaky still over the whole situation. Nobody's managed to pat down all my feathers yet and let me know that it's going to be okay. But, that's a lesson. Learn from my fail.
Yes.
Well, and okay, let's just divert a little bit, because this does kind of bring me to something that I've been, in the back of my mind, there's been a blog post kicking around for a while, and that's where most of my active blogging happens, which is the back of my mind rather than actually on the keyboard. I've written an awful lot. I've just published not much, is kind of the way it goes. But one of the things that I think... various stories that we've seen over time, particularly the Facebook study that they did, that we didn't even know that we were being part of a scientific study about, oh, we're going to put all negative stories in your feed and see if it pisses you off. We're going to manipulate our users' news feeds and study the results because somebody's paying us for the access. And we know that Facebook shapes our news feeds. You're not going to see everything that John Pierre posts. You're not going to see everything that Felicia posts. And particularly with companies that you follow, you don't see everything unless, and they're starting to figure out that they have to pay in order for their posts to be seen by the people who are following them. So we know Facebook is doing it, and we also know Google Plus does it, because, and they're very straightforward about it. If you look in your home stream on Google Plus, those are people, you're seeing the posts of people based on more, fewer, medium, or none, however you've set that circle to show up in your home stream, and Google takes that information and says, oh, okay, Leslie's got Pradeep Shankar in the circle that she wants to see more of, so we'll show her more of what he posts, but not everything. We're going to make some decisions. We're going to have our computer run an algorithm on the stuff that she's read and that she's plussed and that she's commented on, and we're going to show her what we think she will find interesting or fascinating or beautiful or whatever happens to be the adjective of the day that Google is using. And there, since Google Plus isn't selling advertising, we can kind of have some confidence that they're showing to us really the things that they think are going to be more interesting to us, not necessarily that's going to be more profitable to them because they don't make particular profit based on a post. But the bottom line is, what you read on your social media stream is shaped by the owner of that social media company. When I read stuff on Google Plus, I'm reading what Google Plus wants me to read. I'm not reading what I want to read. If I use an RSS reader like Feedly or InnoReader or Google Reader used to be or some of the other ones, that's the only way to be really sure that you're seeing every story published on that blog. The only way to really take responsibility for and control of the information that you see is to control it yourself, and you have to do the work of subscribing to the blogs and the websites that you want to read, and you have to prioritize and you have to decide. Otherwise, you're leaving your information up to somebody else, ABC, CBS, Fox. We laugh at people who get all of their news from Jon Stewart or who get all of their news from ABC. Well, if you're getting all of your news from the people that you follow on Twitter, or if you get all of your news from the people that you follow on Facebook, you're just as limited. You're just as controlled by somebody else. And I don't know that a lot of people have really figured that out. And because there seem to be an awful lot of people out there who say, oh, I just read the Conservative Union every day, and that's how I get my news. I'm like, great, I'm glad that we're a trusty resource, and that's nice, but come on. I don't want that responsibility for you, and B, that's so limiting. And what if we decide to be all cats all the time? You're going to realize that the world has turned into cat land, and you won't know any different.
Don't talk about Pradeep that way.
He is the cat gift guy.
Yes. Yes. No, but also, you can control for some of that. We do, you know, have to be conscious that the sources that we choose need to be broad enough to give us more than just the bubble that we live in. And I do that with Facebook lists. People I don't even follow, I've got listed so that, and I've got quite a few columns in my tweet deck of those lists so that I can see all sorts of people. I've got an urban list of just people like, let's say, Roland Martin and folks like that, just to see what different people are saying about different things. My Google Plus feed, I have no idea how to change the settings on any of that, but I do manage to get a pretty diverse reaction. I'm in some groups that maybe people wouldn't want me to be in from the other side, but I go there and I'm getting that in my feed. Facebook, though, is a much more personal, personal type, a relational-based type social media platform. So that's a little bit different. If people only get their news from Facebook, yeah, I definitely recommend branching out in one of the other areas.
And Twitter is, as far as I know, unfiltered. I mean, if I'm following Kurt Schlichter, I'm going to see every single tweet of his. Whereas if I just depend on my Google Plus home stream, I'm not necessarily going to see every post because Google is filtering. Facebook is filtering based on their algorithm. Twitter, at least,
Google
is giving
you filtering my own site page off of my feed. I'm really frustrated about that.
Yeah, because maybe you don't have it in the right circle that's showing up on Show Me. Yeah, I don't see everything that the Conservative Union posts.
On Facebook, you can fix that. You can control for that by enabling notifications for a page or for a user. So that way you automatically get stuff delivered directly to your inbox whenever they update a post. So I have a bunch of people and a bunch of pages set for notifications. So that's a good way to sort of protect yourself from getting screwed out of information that you might not see because of funky algorithms or people playing, games with
Farmville
with
or whatever. Is Farmville still a thing?
No, I was actually referring to the researchers and stuff. You really got to read that fine print, those end user license agreements, when you sign up for these sites, because
that reminds me. There's a great video out on Netflix terms and conditions. May apply. That would be a very good watch. We're going to put the link in the show description, but really interesting about permissions and the sort of terms that different websites use. Fascinating. Highly recommend that.
Why would we put it in the description when it just appeared like right on the side of your thing right there? It just appeared there. We'll fix it in post.
We'll fix it in post. Oh my gosh.
We'll do it live.
Yes.
famous Bill O'Reilly outtakes. We'll do it live. Wasn't that Bill O'Reilly that did that?
Yes. Yes, it was.
Yeah. I know.
On the topic of feeds and news and where people get their news and all that stuff, I don't want to make too drastic of a leap, but there is a story that I really want to talk about, and I think that Fishy also is interested and ready to get into this one. But one of our, for Free Radical Network, we started our group after being involved with a lot of internet radio stuff and Tony Katz's show and Larry O'Connor and also Dana Lash. And Dana has been just a real, it's been really cool to see Dana make the move from, where she was being on radio in just St. Louis in that area to being a huge, radio host, somebody who is actually a contender in a lot of big markets and is on, you know, is a contributor to Fox News and has her own, I think, show on The Blaze. I don't have The Blaze TV, so I don't really know about these things, but she's made it. It's comfortable to say that she's absolutely crossed over to becoming a real, you know, legit media presence. And she and Glenn Beck and Ted Cruz, I might add, went down to a border town in Texas, and they were participating in a charitable effort, to aid the horrible conditions that some of the border crisis kids are in, and it's just a whole big thing.
Oh, and I think we should say that we consider them horrible conditions because they really are. I mean, but it's horrible conditions on the American scale.
Sure.
For those kids, it could quite possibly be that the fact that they've got a non-dirt floor, it's probably even what we consider horrible conditions is possibly a step up. And it's certainly a step up from what they experienced in their transport from Guatemala and Honduras on the way. But it's still, by our standards, it's horrible because they're sleeping on the floor and eating next to a toilet. So,
well, not only that, but all of there are a lot of bad things going on, and a lot of aid really needs to be rendered in order to keep these kids not having infectious diseases and all sorts of other bad things happening. And I think that we've talked about this topic on The Refinery before a few times, and I think the consensus that we've come to, maybe I don't want to speak for everybody, but I think that personally it's become apparent that the correct thing to do is to say, hey, of course, this was a crime that was committed coming across the border illegally, all of that stuff. But these kids still need to be taken care of. We need to figure out how to address the situation. And right now we have people who are, giving charitable aid to these kids,
mm-hmm.
and are becoming bad guys in the process. Not only bad guys, but elitist rich snobs, according to an American Thinker column, which I've had a lot of good stuff. I've read a lot of good stuff on American Thinker.
Mm-hmm. Lots of good stuff.
I don't know exactly what went on and what happened that allowed this to be a post there, but it is a post. And what's even more confusing to me is that not only was it posted on the American Thinker and it's still up there, it's Americans Protest Illegals as High Profile Conservatives Pander by M. Catherine Evans.
I've never heard of M. Catherine Evans.
I've never heard of her either, but not only was it posted to an American Thinker, it was excerpted onto Breitbart.com. And it says some really, really mean, nasty things about Dana Lash and about Glenn Beck. Conveniently, I think, personally, not mentioning Ted Cruz in an ill light.
There. Interesting.
But the pandering thing. Dana Lash came out with a response to it. She posted on her site that will also be in the all of these links will be in the thing below. When the video uploads, but just a quote from the article that is bashing Dana. While we regular cash-strapped taxpayers concerned about the well-being of our country stood on the overpasses Saturday protesting the total breakdown of our borders, where were our few stalwart conservative spokespeople and politicians? They were holding anti-illegal immigration signs with "We the People" on the Were they holding anti-immigration signs with "We the People" on the national day of protesting against immigration reform, amnesty, and border search? I'm sorry, I think I read the. No. That's the right one. But it's the what it's trying to imply is that Dana Loesch is not a regular, cash-strapped taxpayer concerned about immigration. So it's saying that she's rich, and she's not a regular, you know, American taxpayer. It's all of the. It feels like an attack from a leftist, quite frankly. Well, in my opinion.
And it's the classic leftist false dichotomy. You're either taking care of children, or you're protesting illegals. And if you're not protesting the illegals, then you're obviously in favor of open borders or something. It's like your choice was to either take care of children or to stand on the overpasses and protest illegals. You couldn't, it's not valid to do either one, to do anything but one of those two. And there is no in between. There's no way to be, if you're feeding the children, you obviously can't also be opposed to illegals. I mean, it's so intellectually dishonest. I can't even see straight. We get all over liberals for using these kind of logical fallacies.
Right, right. And may I say that when we're talking about private charity with humanitarian aid in a crisis situation,
exactly,
in a place that's being overwhelmed with, you know, cash-strapped counties and resources that they don't have, that they're waiting on some sort of relief. Either they're going to get it from the federal government or the private sector, cash-strapped taxpayers, are going to pitch in. Which would you prefer, to show that the federal government can't do this as well as a private organization? Now, what we're seeing that's getting a little bit interesting is that private organizations are taking federal dollars and then, you know, becoming a vessel through which federal dollars are passing into aid situations. Okay, we can argue about that all day long.
Right.
But the fact is that Mercury One was doing a very privately funded, charitable, humanitarian emergency relief effort, and at the same time, a fact-finding mission to go down and interview and talk with the people that are dealing intimately with this border situation, which everyone in the right knows that the president has not, in fact, done at all. And to imply that conservatives are so limited in their abilities that they cannot chew gum and walk at the same time, that they cannot help children in an emergency, as well as advocate for the government actually doing the responsibilities that it's supposed to do and carry those out, is ridiculous. And any conservative that's got that position, I'm begging them to reconsider that position, because it is harmful, it is divisive, it is dishonest, it is completely outside of logic and reason based on everything they say on the conservative side that they support. And I'm trying very carefully to measure my words, because I am livid that this has happened. And lots of bad words are not making it through the filter at this moment, for which I'm sure everyone is grateful. But if anybody wants to hear the other words, you know, give me a call later, and I'll let you in on all the, yeah.
Fishy uncensored after dark.
before we get John in on this, and I really would love to hear his opinion on this, but. I just want to read another bit from this article. This drove me absolutely nuts. Okay, the writer, this M. Catherine Evans, quotes Dana Loesch from The Blaze. Before the trip, Blaze and Fox News commentator Dana Loesch offered this explanation for her decision to help out at the border, even though she is staunchly opposed to illegal immigration. The feisty liberal turned conservative, why do we need to know this, sounds positively out of touch with the very people and issues she purports to champion. From The Blaze, the Gospels also implore us to minister and to witness, and the parable of the talents implores us to use that which we have been given by God to do good and glorify his name through our works, which includes using our talents and our platform to serve as good stewards of our fellow man. If the issue is Glenn Beck advertising for help with this effort, do they also find it offensive when celebrities promote wounded warriors? Do they find the Salvation Army offensive when celebrities work with them? I mean, isn't the whole point of charity awareness and to raise funds to help? Lash, who will be accompanying Beck to the border, said she understands the frustrations of those who were angered by the event, saying, "I get it. You feel like you cannot take it anymore from this administration. You feel overwhelmed. Every day there's a new headline. The NSA, the IRS, the EPA, the NEA, the BLM, the DOJ, the ICE, Benghazi, voter fraud, healthcare. The list goes on, and you feel persecuted, and your patience for everything has run out. Fam, I feel you." That was Dana's quote. The next line, I don't understand this on a, it drives me nuts from a writer's perspective, because this elitist "I feel your pain" rhetoric would not matter or even register on the relevancy meter if these so-called conservative provocateurs did not put up a pretense of representing we the people.
Oh my God. Wow. Yeah, all I can say to that is that that writer does not represent me.
And I'm going to say that there's probably a reason we haven't heard of this person. I'm just going to lay that out there.
Yeah. Yeah. John Nolte over at Breitbart, he came right out of the gate criticizing Glenn Beck for his messaging about soccer balls and charity. And Glenn was a little over the top on his when he initially started with that charity, because Glenn was, you know, showman fame whore that he is. You know, Glenn was all, "I'm going and I'm going to do my charity stuff, and anybody who disagrees with me doesn't care about children." I mean, he started it out by creating a real weird false dichotomy, but in a sense you just kind of have to look past that, because that's Glenn Beck's shtick. And John Nolte wrote some articles about Glenn Beck is evil because Breitbart versus The Blaze, and that's, you know, that's some shtick that goes on there for clickbait or whatever. But actually a week or so, and I didn't read too much about it because it was uninteresting to me. I don't like the partisan infighting that I see. But I did notice a couple of weeks later or a week later that John Nolte was kind of backing off and saying, you know, I had a very strong reaction to what Glenn was doing, but my reaction that was the way he was saying it, not what he was doing. And so, you know, that's cool. I get that. Yeah. But apparently this American Thinker guy is having the reaction to what Glenn Beck is doing and what Dana is doing. And I don't get that at all. Not even at all.
Well, he made a liberal attack against both of them. I mean, calling them out, like, he was practically making fun of their wealth, or if they had any wealth. So, I mean, that's what liberals do, you know? And I'm surprised he actually made that attack, because, like, what are we, liberals, that we would attack somebody's wealth and what they do with it?
It's mind-boggling, and it's not a he, it's a she, and yeah. I don't know who she is, but it's not even just that this article happened. I mean, that happens sometimes, and it's out there on American Thinker. What really is mind-boggling to me is that it made its way from American Thinker to Breitbart. It got excerpted to Breitbart. And the relevant passages are on Breitbart.
Unattributed.
Nobody's
taking credit for moving it there.
Oh yeah, no, and it's
nobody's bylines on that.
There's no byline on it. It just says, you know, the staff, whatever it is, whatever the generic line is for them to post, news stories like stuff from the wires, is the line on it. It's crazy to me that this kind of vitriol, and I don't know. there's been a lot of bad blood between Breitbart and Glenn Beck and Dana Lash and Breitbart and all that stuff. But seriously, I don't understand what good this does, and how is this supposed to help the conservative brand in any way, shape, or form? I mean, I don't get it, and it's disturbing to me. I read that article, and I think that was Prue who got that to us. Yeah. So thanks Prue for bringing that up, for finding it. I was just disgusted and dismayed that it exists, number one, but the fact that it goes to such length. I mean, I didn't read the whole article here, but it does go on. It doesn't just stop there. It continues on, and it's really, really
I want to lay this out for people. Pardon me, I'm on going a little rant, but hopefully we'll...
Hold on quick, let me mute.
Oh. Seriously, okay. We're talking about a humanitarian crisis. There's no argument about that. When you have thousands and thousands of immigrants of any age or any country of origin that show up on your shores, that is a humanitarian crisis. People in poverty with potential illnesses, with no destination except getting across the border. That is a problem. It is a problem that is currently under the purview of the federal government to deal with. That is just the way it is. Those are the facts. Now, having said that, the people that are taking care of the folks that have come across the border, again, doesn't matter what age, doesn't matter what country of origin, but the people that are charged with their care are the people who should be monitoring the borders. But the border patrol have been moved into a hold and process function. This is just the way it is. I'm not making any statement yet about who's supposed to do what. That is the picture on the ground. And so you have a federal government that is run at the administrative level by Barack Obama, who is refusing to do deportations, apparently, who is refusing to expedite them, and who has taken advantage of a human trafficking law in order to, we all believe, throw open the doors of the United States to children and unaccompanied minors and children with, young children with parents, in order to invite them to come for, any number of purposes, but people believe to eventually swell the Democratic voter rolls. Okay, but regardless, you have a federal government that is not going to do the job of processing people in the way that one would expect, because it is an administration that is unwilling. That said, we have governors who are, attempting to work through the problem because their state resources are going to be taxed. Rick Perry has said that he's sending 1,000 National Guard troops to the border to help deal with things on the American side. I don't know in what capacity exactly, but that is part of the plan. And Greg Abbott, the Attorney General of Texas, has said they're sending the bill to the federal government. So all these things are going on. And the only way that you're going to police your borders in the way that conservatives say they want them policed is to change the people who are in charge of enforcement so that they will enforce it. The people in charge will enforce it. You cannot, we've already talked about the viability of impeachment. It is not going to happen, not within the time frame that people need it to happen in order for it to help with this problem. It just isn't. So that option is really off the table short term, period. Now, I don't care what overpass you stand in front of, or over with a sign, it's not going to change this situation right now. But we have this situation on the ground right now, and we have charities and people like Glenn Beck, whatever you might think of him, and I'm not the biggest fan in the world, believe me, it's a good instinct, it's a good idea. And if you are not moved by the plight of these children, because perhaps you're more concerned about your own. I get it. I totally get it. But the fact remains, they're there. The federal government is not dealing with the problem. And we, of course, cannot on our own enforce those borders. I don't care what people say about militias and whatever. We cannot do it. What follow that out to the end result won't look pretty. And so for anyone to start attacking conservatives, liberals, I don't care who goes down to the border and attempts to ameliorate suffering, attempt to find out what's going on, gather information, and use their high-profile status to do it, I am okay with that. Not only am I okay with that, more power to them, and I wish them the best to do it. But people who are going to choose that situation to make divisions in the conservative movement over someone choosing to help in this way rather than, say, go join somebody at an overpass with a sign. I cannot tell you how destructive and divisive that is. And if you are one of those people and you're watching, I'm going to advise you very carefully to rethink your position, because what you're doing is marginalizing yourself so much and giving the left so much ammunition to talk about heartless conservatives. You know that conservatives give to charity and love people and do things for people. They don't manage to do it with public dollars when we can help it. We like to do that privately. And for people to very, very narrowly define these things as either or, you either are against border invasion or you are for border invasion based on your actions, is one of the most disingenuous things. You had better cut it out. You had better, I'm talking to you, M. Catherine Evans, think through that again, and Breitbart for reposting it. You would better check yourself on these things, because that sort of thing is going to destroy the heart of this movement based on giving left every bit of ammunition they will need to characterize us in perpetuity, just from this one thing, in perpetuity, as evil, horrible people. And I'm not going to be attached to that sort of thing. And if people have a problem with that, hey, let's come talk it out. I got all day for you.
You forgot to drop the mic. It's still clipped. You need to drop it. Dropping is part of the process. Yeah. And I fully expect that if the trend continues from the way that that this article, you know, worked or didn't work or you know happened, the only thing that she would get out of this is she would get the part where you say check and then figure out how to edit privilege in there. And that's what it would be. You've already professed to and have shared, in fact, videos about conservative social justice. So you are in fact a leftist and a rhino and should be rejected. So just want to throw that out there.
Bring it, baby. Bring it.
Oh boy. So yeah, we're a little bit riled up here on the refinery tonight.
Well, I think this article is an opportunity for us to really do what we have set out to do, which is discuss how do we improve conservative messaging so that we can kind of work to put an end to the incorrect perception that we, I don't know, hate babies and poor people or want to throw grandma off the cliff or whatever it is. And Felicia sort of touched on what's important when big stories arrive, trying to guide the conversation in a useful direction is always a challenge, because people want to just talk about the big things. I mean, we see so many blog posts about, Obama should do this and what Obama should do. And I tune out and why just skip past any article that starts that way? Because if you're taking your time to write an article that's advising Obama what he should do, you're wasting your time and mine because it's never going to happen. That's why, you know, of late I started writing things about focus on the states. You need to talk to your governor, talk to your state senator, because Washington isn't going to do anything about this border crisis. They're simply not going to. The only way to get Washington to do anything about this border crisis begins in January of next year. And what we can do to make that better is we can win elections in November. So the only attention you need to be focused on Washington about is on electing Republicans in Washington. That's the only thing that matters in Washington right now, because the rest of it is just a waste. It's, you know, write it off. You know, if you want to pay attention to Washington, pay attention to the elections in November. If you want to pay attention to the border crisis and get something done there, be talking to your governor, your state rep, your state senator. And voila, apparently Rick Perry is like Kevin Williamson, and he reads my posts and listens to the refinery, because Rick Perry is now sending 1,000 troops down to the border. You're welcome, guys. I recommended that he do that, and I recommended that he, you know, just do stuff and send them the bill, and say basically Barack Obama, so sue me. You know, guys, we're having an impact. We really are. Did you know that there was an article about me this week? Did you know I was the subject of the entire interview? Yeah, I'm something. Okay, sorry, that was a little ego moment there. What? I have ADD, and I get distracted.
And you're a narcissist.
a fine piece of journalism from Jean-Pierre.
From Jean-Pierre.
That was a fun interview to read.
It was the best article ever written, ever, because it was about me. It was totally fascinating. I liked it.
Thanks, guys.
I am a benevolent narcissist.
We give it 5 stars.
Yeah. There we go. Awesome. But, you know, so we do this stuff. If you want to be involved in stuff on the border, you talk to your politicians at the state level. And then if you want to actually do something, sure, you can engage in a protest. But what you can really do to really put action to helping stuff at the border, you go to Falfurrias and volunteer there to recover bodies that are hidden out in the brush. Or you go to McAllen and hand out water and diapers to the baby children. Those are the things you can do. But standing up and screaming about what Obama should do or what any Washington politician should do, that's just kind of a waste of time. And I think what we can do here in the refinery, since we think this way, is try to direct conversations and make sure that, you know, on our own part, we skip past the articles about what Obama should do and just ignore it. Don't even bother commenting on it. Don't bother telling people it's a waste of time to think about it. Instead of telling people don't bother with that, we highlight and discuss the things that should be happening, which is, okay, maybe now we need to convince Jan Brewer to do what Rick Perry is doing. Now we need to talk to Bobby Jindal and get him to adapt some of Texas things. And let's have this whole movement of the states taking over and doing what Washington is failing to do and send Washington the bill. Hey, maybe the hashtag is send Washington the bill. I don't know.
And you're totally racist because you forgot Susana Martinez. You didn't mention her. And
I knew there was a state in there that, yeah, exactly. Sorry, Susana.
But that is good, that focus on the action items of things that you can accomplish now. And what better way to put the feds off their game, by the way, than having states really assert power because of, say, an emergency crisis? Giving the opportunity for a state to say, hey, you're doing things that are detrimental to my citizens, I'm going to handle it, and I will send you the bill, or you're going to come and handle it. One or the other. Do you want that power in your state more in your own hands, or do you want to cede it to Washington? Rick Perry didn't do 1,000 National Guard troops on the border because he woke up and felt like it. There's significant pressure in Texas to do that. So let's move to the next state and the next state and the next state.
Exactly. And that puts the energy, takes the energy away from bitching about Obama and puts the energy directed at encouraging Jan Brewer and that other person, Susana Martinez. I was...
Terrible. But I think you're right. I mean, this is something that George Templeton at Rodent Politics talked about a couple of weeks ago, and it is absolutely valid, and it is something that can work, you know, and it's something that puts momentum in our favor, and that's pretty rare. I mean, that's not something that we get all the time in the conservative movement, so we need to capitalize on it and get that going. But if you've already done that, if you've already gone to your state reps, if you've already tried to contact your governor and talk about these things, and there is no election in your state, we need to beat this into the ground for the billionth time. There are elections out there that do matter that you can change. My personal two favorites are Joni Ernst in Iowa and Monica Webby in Oregon, which is such a close race and would be so amazing if we could take it. It's something that we need to do. We need to make sure that we take back the Senate in January of next year. It's got to be what gets done.
And can we be really honest and think about the things that when we're taking an action, that we be really honest about what the federal government is willing to do under current leadership and what they are not? You can put as much pressure as you like on this administration and attempt to force them to do the right thing, but time and time and time again, we've seen that does not work. There's too much political cover. There's too much benefit to them not doing the things that we would be asking them to do. Can anyone say missing hard drives?
Right.
But there are effective, actionable items that we can take that are going to actually bear some fruit, and they usually involve putting pressure or supporting the stance of Republican governors, Republican lawmakers. If we're talking about anything in the Senate now, there's nothing that we can do to pass things in the Senate. Harry Reid's still in charge. So let's fix that. Let's go take some Senate races and make them winnable, and not only winnable, but very winnable, so that we can take the Senate back and at least have that also between us and the administration. And then 2 years from then let's pick a presidential candidate and push them over the line with, you know, blood, sweat, tears, whatever it takes. Those are actionable things that we can do and goals we can set that are achievable and reasonable. And then focusing on what the government ought to do, as Leslie said, what the federal government ought to do is a nice thought exercise. It's a great thing to talk about the principles they should be following. They are not following them. So let's get people in place who will.
And I think there is a place for discussion and even some emotion and campaigning about what the government should do. If you're doing it from the standpoint of this will help in the Senate race, if you genuinely are doing it because you think screaming louder is going to change Obama's mind, you're off target. But if you're screaming and yelling about a particular policy because you believe and you've thought it through and you think that this is what's going to educate voters and is going to help get people energized and to the polls in November because this is an issue, then knock yourself out for it. Just, you know, be talking about how Obama's doing the wrong thing if you're doing it with a perspective that it's that your goal is to drive people to the polls in November. You know, look at your message needs to be in tune with a realistic goal. If your goal is to get Obama to change his mind, that's not a realistic goal. If your goal is to drive voters to the polls in November to vote for your guys, whoever they might be, you know, just to energize them, then okay. If the message is congruent with that goal, that makes sense. That's where back when we were talking about the government shutdown, there was a case to be made that was the right thing to do at the time, because the target of that was not because it was going to change anything long term, because we all knew it wasn't going to, but the idea was to show our side that we did have some people who would stand up and fight for a principle. And there were people on our side who didn't believe that was ever going to happen, and they kind of needed that. And they needed that message. And so, yeah, there was a reason for that. And as long as we're understanding that even when we're talking about Obama's doing the wrong thing, as long as we know that we're not really going to change his mind, because we're not going to. But if it's talking about Obama's doing the wrong thing so that when people go to the polls in November, they vote for our guys, then that makes sense. It's just a does it make sense where I'm kind of trying to say the same thing, that we can say the same thing but tweaked a little differently?
Yeah, it does make sense. Sorry, everybody had their mics off for a second there.
Yeah, well, I'm about to make my protest sign and show up outside your house because you're totally sold out.
I did. I'm a rhino. It's sold out. McCain 2016.
You're worse than a rhino. You're an Obama lover.
Oh, well, yeah. See, I'm a closet. I have actually literally been accused of being a closet liberal who is pretending and trolling all of you guys. I'm trying to get you on my side because I'm a closet liberal. I was called that by one of the true warriors.
I'm sure he was very principled. And
I believe it was somebody who didn't like the fact that we deleted them for cussing on the Conservative Union. Because if you don't like cuss words, you are not for freedom.
Well, that's the thing, is that freedom of speech, you know.
Sure.
We're impeding his freedom of speech by telling him to, you know, not curse on your private forum.
Yeah. No. Oh, today I was called the NSA for trying to control the internet. And then I'm delusional.
I don't even want to hear that story. It's
oh, there are some
hot.
Fun people. Some
it's,
fun
it's,
people.
It's too hot, and I'm already too annoyed with everything else. There's no let's not hear that story.
Okay.
Man,
okay.
It's a sad, annoying day when we have this kind of situation from our own guys, and that's the thing that really sucks the most, is that we're talking about friendly fire here, or what should be friends, and it just drives me nuts. I don't get it. I don't understand it.
Yeah, what is the purpose behind M. Catherine Evans spending the hour that it took writing that blog post and all of the hours that have been spent reading and addressing comments afterwards? What was the goal in writing that article? What was the point? What was she trying to achieve?
You got me. I don't know. Here's the ending paragraph. So if these high-profile conservatives think they will keep raking in the votes and money while playing both sides, they are delusional. Heart-tugging photo ops, slick marketing, savvy, sexy book covers, another hit at Dana, and courting the Tea Party rank and file may have worked up until now, but anyone who lends his name or face to this government-sponsored invasion of illegals could soon be on the outs with those of us standing on bridges. I am not looking at the Hangout right now because I'm on the page with the article. But if Fishy is on the ground and flailing, somebody please call medical services.
She's hanging in there. She's maintaining. She's
okay.
Doing okay.
All right.
I am grinding my teeth so hard.
Yeah. Not so good. Ryan, how you been, man?
Doing good. How about you guys? I missed the first part where we interviewed John Pierre. I'm kind of sad about that.
Well, I'm sure there's plenty of time left for questions for John Pierre, so definitely, you know, we'll get into that. But Ryan, did you get a chance to read this article? Did you get a chance to see any of what we were talking about?
No, I have not yet. I just got it in chat, and I've been listening and instead of reading it. So maybe I'll take a few minutes and read it. I kind of had a question on what Leslie was sort of just talking about. Is it better to focus on one thing, maybe talk to some Democrats or some people in the center and pick one scandal or pick one thing like how we fix healthcare or something like that? Or is it better to attack from all sides? How are you going to get the people in the center to wake up? How are you going to get the more moderate Democrats to realize this is bad, switch sides? Is it better to say the NSA affects everyone, let's just hammer that point home? The IRS affects everyone, let's hammer that point home? Or death by a thousand cuts and point out each scandal all the time as they come along? You know, what do you, as far as getting people to wake up, as far as getting that message out, as far as, like Leslie said, don't tell Obama what to do. We know he's not going to listen to us, but we can say, look, this is the problem. This is how we'd fix it. Next scandal comes up. This is the problem. This is how we'd fix it. And what's the best method to go about getting people?
Well, I will say that I'm just going to throw in something here. Overloading people's senses politically never really helps. So like throwing in, like if you're talking to a liberal, throwing in a bunch of things like, well, what about the NSA? What about this? What about that? They just automatically freak out and go into defensive mode, and then you've lost them right there, and then you have to wait like 6 months for them to get back to normal attitude so you can talk to them. So overloading them with that, I wouldn't advise. I mean, focusing on one issue is nice because then you can really concentrate on it with that one person and go deeper into it logically and socially and how it affects different groups and everything instead of blasting them and like shooting machine gun at them.
So again, it kind of comes down to a one-on-one relationship, and then once you've built that relationship, work on one issue at a time instead of just, I mean, like Pradeep does a great job of posting articles, and he posts a couple hundred a day probably, and they cover, you know, he tries to stay on Obamacare because that's his favorite thing and that's what he knows, but he also, every other scandal that comes out, every article, he's like my news RSS feed pretty much. And so it's like, I mean, do we attack like that and just, and hopefully those people who we have relationships see all of the corruption, all the stuff going on, or is it just one-on-one relationship, get to know the person, get to know the things they care about, and then talk about that one thing until you make headway there, and we just all pick one person and work one person at a time, and have some people that maybe post everything like Pradeep does, and some of us do one at a time? Maybe that's the best way to go?
Well, I mean, I would say that, all of us, I assume all of us have, like, one area that we have an expertise on. So with Pradeep, I guess, you know, okay, you're not, okay. But in general, usually we all have our own, like, passions and whatnot on this, and on a certain topic, and so we focus a lot on it. Like, when I first started out, I was really heavily into, like, Islam kind of related stuff, so I really did research that a lot, and so I knew that the most. I will admit, Obamacare is not a strong suit whatsoever, so I usually leave that to more experienced people who know their stuff on it. And, but with that, let's see. I would suggest, when you're talking to one person, it helps focusing on one person and not blasting a bunch of people also with one message. But when you're talking, so you talk to one person and really trying to build some form of relationship is good with them is always a nice thing. And then maybe if they bring something up, like say on Twitter, I have a few people on lists that I check out and see what they're talking about. And if one of them mention something politically, whatever, and it's usually more like they're trying to figure out something, and it's not obviously like they're ranting or got pissed off that day, I usually will try to add something in, and then follow up on that and talk about it, but usually I want to outright talk to somebody about an issue, not unless I've already been talking to them for a while.
So one thing that Andy says, and he talked about it last week in one of the clips JD shared, is to when you're talking to a liberal, you know, say, I love the reason you're liberal on this. And for me, that's really hard because I think that they're liberal for the same reason that their heroes are liberal. You know, it's like, well, you look up to Margaret Sanger and FDR, and you know, you look up to all these huge racists who want to eliminate the whole race. I think you're smart enough to know the history, so therefore you must agree with it. And that's the wrong thing. Most of them probably want to be there.
That's a bad way to come at it, because you're assuming a lot that they know a lot more than you think that they do, because they do not know anywhere near as much as you think they do, I should say.
Yeah.
There's a reason why Margaret Sanger doesn't get brought up in those circles a lot of the time.
Yeah.
You know, these are not, you could make a case with FDR. You can do that. But when it comes to Margaret Sanger, she doesn't. It's very hush hush, and people don't know about that stuff. So those are very effective talking points to use. But again, it's if you're talking about abortion as a one-on-one issue, that's a difficult issue, number one, to interact with a person on, because it's so emotional and it's tough to go there.
I only have a few liberals in my circles, and I think my goal for the next few weeks is going to be to add more and just to ask people, you know, what makes you believe this? Not say anything about it. Just ask, what makes you liberal? What do you like about their policies? What do you like? And just get to know them so that I can honestly say, you know what, I like that reason. That totally makes sense to me. Now let's get down to the politics and the policies and how, you know, raising the minimum wage. So let's look at all the studies on how that's actually worked in real life, compared to your ideal of how you think it would work. And I need to get to know people more and get to know where they're coming from, because my life is fairly sheltered. My life on G+ is kind of sheltered, and I need to get out there more.
Well, and I think a lot of what the "I love the reason you're liberal" phrase is the opening that allows you to stand alongside the person and agree with them and get them to open up and listen. And for most people, the reason that they're liberal is because they care about the poor and they care about the downtrodden and they care about the needy. And what most people understand is if you care about the underdog, you're a liberal, because liberals care about the poor and the downtrodden and the needy. I, in fact, have had liberal people tell me that I'm a liberal because I care about the poor. Okay. I care about the poor as well. I love that reason that you're liberal. I love the reason that you're liberal because you believe that people should be able to choose and control their own bodies. I agree with that. And then you go on from there, because you've just surprised them, and by agreeing with them, you've caused them to slow down and listen to you. And that's really all it is. I agree. I love the reason you're liberal. You're actually saying, I love what I'm going to assume is the reason that you're liberal. It may not be the reason they're liberal. The reason they're liberal may be that they love Karl Marx. Who the hell knows? But you're going to start out the conversation by saying, I love the reason that you're liberal. I'm assuming that reason is because you care about poor people, because I care about poor people too.
And I think it's really important to make the distinction that we're going to know people in our lives that it'll be easier to talk to about that. And then we're going to know people on the internet that it'll be a little bit of a different dynamic. Mm-hmm. And just because someone is on the internet, and this goes back to a lot of things that we've talked about already, doesn't mean they're not a real human being with real things going on in their lives. And too often, I think we begin to think of people that if we disconnect from them, if we're only talking electronically, or if they are so other from us as to be, you know, irredeemably liberal or whatever, and we might define that completely differently from the next person of what irredeemably liberal would mean, that it's so much easier to be ugly and nasty. And I have no doubt that, say, you know, the author of the piece we're talking about, it, American Think banker doesn't have any connection with Dana Lash or Glenn Beck or any of these people. They've never encountered them, have never seen them as people, but as figures, as public figures, as you know, these maybe even mythological people. You know, in some ways they've built that up. There are real human beings in this fight, and we're nasty and ugly and mean to them a lot. And I'm not just talking about, you know, being mean to liberals. I'm talking about that inter-conservative fighting going on.
Yeah.
These are people, and the children at the border are people, and the border patrol that are dealing with this are people, and the National Guard guys that are going down there are people. And we saw the internet and technology removes us so much from the realization that you get when you live next door to somebody of how human and how much of a person, a real person they are. And I hope that people start thinking about that when they're messaging anything, because it's really great to have these, you know, bombastic and exciting and snarky messages that go out all the time. You know, there's some fun in that and whatever, but if you're attacking people, be really certain that you're really thinking that through, because really, the kind of reaction that I've had to seeing Dana especially attacked in this way, it's incredible. My blood pressure is probably, I'm probably going to have to go to the doctor for all this, because I've met her. I know her. She knows who I am. We've had conversations. She's a real person to me. I've seen her as a person for a long time. This is not just some celebrity that flitters around from place to place. The woman works incredibly hard to get what we all want.
Mm-hmm.
One article, somebody has tried to marginalize her into some cardboard cutout of what she is.
Oh, come on, just say it. Leave Dana alone. Come on.
Yeah,
just
leave Dana alone. Sorry.
Do it.
No, we need Chris to do that.
Yes.
Chris Lash. Because he'll get the mascara.
We need the mascara. Leave Dana alone.
We'll go and do that.
There but it's serious. These are people, and that's a great point. Bringing up, you know, Britney Spears though. Because people do that to celebrities all the time. We become mean because we are so distant. And this world, those kind of comments don't stay in your home circle anymore.
Well, part of it is the distance that the internet gives us. It separates us from that face-to-face, in-person human interaction. And most of us learned in high school that, you know, conversation and understanding and meaning is only, what, 7% the words you use. Then there's the tone of voice. Then there's the expression on your face. Then there's the physical, your body movements and close or far away and all of these other nonverbal things that convey meaning. And on the internet, we lose all of that. And then you narrow it down even further to Twitter, and you're limited to the number of characters that you can use. And people are looking at their social media accounts on the phone as they're at a stoplight, so they're totally distracted. So you're only getting half attention to 5% of the meaning. And people don't really know how to write well anyway, so expecting them to write something that conveys a lot of meaning in 120 characters, that's asking a lot of people that are totally incapable and totally not up to the task. And as a result, the only thing that people can do effectively via Twitter and on a, because Twitter isn't, it's not a threaded conversation. It's just a smash and grab kind of thing. So all you can do is say, you suck, you're ugly, your mother dresses you funny, your daddy, your mama wears army boots. You know, all you can say is those nasty kinds of things. You're not actually going to have a good back and forth conversation with any kind of value exchanged, because people just aren't taking the time. They're looking at a picture and they're forwarding it. They're tweeting a couple of characters. They're retweeting, and you know, even the default Twitter, you know, the standard Twitter interface to retweet is just click click. They don't even, Twitter doesn't even allow you by default to add your own comments to a retweet. They don't even want you to say anything. They just want you to retweet it. I mean, that's just sad. And I think it does separate, and then you have the whole fake name thing. And, you know, I'm Leslie P. I don't give people my last name, and I'm a cartoon. So, you know, who am I to criticize, right? It's because I break.
I wouldn't call you a cartoon. You're funny sometimes, so I wouldn't call you a cartoon.
Look, I have that Avatar thing that's a cartoon.
I watched the Lego Movie this last weekend. I think that qualifies as a cartoon, and it was hilarious. So that's not fair.
Thank you, Ryan. I was going to call him out for it. I'm glad you beat me to it.
What? Oh, man. I don't understand. See, here we go again. I'm being attacked by a bunch of other conservatives for something that was just... These are erroneous attacks against me and my character. So,
are these microaggressions?
Yeah.
And everybody saw you do it. I mean, everybody saw you do it. So you can sit there and defend yourself, but it is not going to work.
Well, since they're coming from Fishy, they're definitely microaggressions.
Ooh, short jokes.
Speaking of microaggressions, did you guys see Ted Cruz's response to True Blood?
No.
That was... Oh, it's funny. He just rips him apart. And it's really nice language. And, you know, I shared it. Let me find it. I'll read it.
Yeah, definitely you need to share that.
Well, I did share it already, so you can look on my profile. But
yeah, but I don't read your stuff. Oh, wait, was I not supposed to?
Yeah, I know. Of all the places I never thought to be mentioned, HBO's True Blood would have to be near the top of the list. Sunday night, they aired a misogynistic, profanity and profanity-ridden episode where Texas Republicans are murdered attending a Ted Cruz fundraiser. Well, I'm sorry to have lost the vampire boat, but I'm astonished and amused that HBO is suggesting the hardcore leftists are blood-sucking fiends. Then again, I never had a chance with the vampire boat, since the dead tend to overwhelmingly vote for Democrats.
Blood-sucking vampires are Democrats. Well done, well done. He's got a good PR team. They seem to have a good sense of humor and an ability to be biting and strong while also being a little bit funny.
Biting?
Didn't really.
Wow.
Sorry. Oops. Oops.
That's another thing though. Ted Cruz was at the border, and you know, I mean, I mentioned that earlier. The article does talk a little bit about Ted Cruz, but it really, you know, it kind of skips over that part.
Well, and he was there before. I saw the one picture. There's like one picture of him getting a box out of a truck or something. And I saw that a couple of days ago. Was that that trip, or has he been down there twice?
I don't know.
And I just know that hasn't, the whole Ted Cruz thing hasn't gotten much press. I don't know if that's because he's... Why is it that it's not getting as much notice as Glenn Beck and Dana Lash and all of them? Is it just because nobody really cares? Because, you know, every time Rand Paul mentions a word, he gets an article. Is it that Rand Paul has a better PR organization that's making sure? Is it that more people are interested in what Rand Paul is doing and they're not as interested in what Ted Cruz is doing?
I hope so.
I know that.
Sorry about that.
You're very much a fan of Rand, and that's cool.
My question would be, is anybody even seeing anything on it in the mainstream media? Are we just talking to ourselves about this?
It may be. I'm sure we are just talking to ourselves about it. I doubt the mainstream media even knows that any kind of charitable event... I think the only charitable stuff that the media is talking about with regards to the border crisis is... All of a sudden, now they love Catholics now, because the Catholics are wanting to take in the children and be all in favor of amnesty. And that's, you were kind of talking about that earlier, the difference between what Mercury One is doing, which is completely privately funded charitable outreach. And they do that not just at the border, but they do a lot of charitable outreach everywhere. And Catholic churches and Catholic organizations are taking taxpayer dollars to do their, to then take in children and place them with families and all of that kind of stuff. And it's a different type of charity. There's the privately funded charity, and then there's the charity that's getting in bed with government. And I think what we see the media liking is the charity that's in bed with government.
Right, and I think we have to really be careful with that too. Not us, I mean, necessarily, but I think we get it here. But I think everyone should be thinking that through, because, again, a humanitarian crisis, there might be infrastructure lack up and down the chain of the supply chain of getting help to people. And a church might be in a better position to administer aid of a certain emergency type. So I mean, even though I'm kind of critical of that compared to efforts of, say, Mercury One, it might be the only way that government, as it's currently structured, with the resources that they are, you know, having at their disposal, it might be the only way to get those resources to people in an emergency. I want to be very clear about that.
That's true. They have the infrastructure and the community outreach already up, and I would much rather taxpayer dollars go to Catholic charities and Little Sisters of the Poor than to go to Emmanuel Fund that's setting up a storefront in Chicago, the heart of Chicago, to do, quote, outreach, unquote, you know, and that ends up being slush fund kind of stuff. So, yeah, if tax dollars are going to be given to charitable organizations, I would much rather they go to, you know, Bear Creek Assistance Ministries, or, you know, Cypress Cares Assistance Ministries, or Catholic Church Associations, because they do have the phone trees and the people that they can call to serve the hot meals, and they have the connections in the Hispanic community. The Catholic churches do.
And they'll probably have the resources to do more with what they're given from the federal government. Again, I don't think
right.
They can be better. Is in the business, but they probably can manage that better.
But then there's always going to be the strings. If you're doing it on federal money, then the strings are going to come later. And there are, you know, Catholic churches that are not in name only, but they are Catholic churches, but they are very in bed with liberal government policies and all of that kind of stuff. So it's not as easy to be 100% supportive. With Mercury One, I can be 100% supportive of what they do. With some of the Catholic stuff, it's, okay, let me be a little skeptical, but I think they are the right thing. I don't know.
Well, with the Catholics, you also have the whole social justice movement, which sometimes, well, most of the times, transforms into government policies.
Yeah.
So then there's that.
Yeah, it's like that's step two of Catholic charities. Like, I really like your step one. Can we just not do that whole step two thing?
Yeah, preferable. It would be preferable if we could skip that part.
Yeah.
Before we drop the whole immigration topic and the topic of this article that was written at Dana Lash and Glenn Beck, but mostly at Dana Lash. I did say before that Dana wrote a rebuttal or something to that effect, a fisking really, on her site on danalashradio.com. And in the article, she actually writes down something she said earlier in the day. And I thought this is really relevant to what we've been talking about. You could be hardcore against amnesty, but the government will not allow the people to be deported, she continued. That's basically everything
except
that she said.
Except the situation we're in, yeah.
You could be hardcore against, like, we're hardcore against amnesty. Not a single one of us here is for open borders. Not a single one of us here is for amnesty. But the government will not allow the people to be deported, she continued. In the meantime, this is the choice. It is either public money, tax dollars, and we bankrupt border towns, or it's private charity. These people are on the side of government. That's not conservative. For these people saying, well, go down there and giving someone a sandwich is a welcome wagon, no, Danny concluded. Let's take two steps back here. The welcoming party is the administration creating this problem. The welcoming party is Representative Nancy Pelosi going to the border and saying she's for amnesty. The welcoming party is Congressman John Lewis, who said last week he doesn't believe in borders. If people want to have frustration, I'm mad too. But sandwiches didn't cause the problem. It's the false beacon of amnesty that caused the problem. So,
yes.
As conservatives and as people who want to solve problems, we need to deal with the amnesty situation. How we deal with the amnesty situation, as Fishy already outlined, is you win.
You win elections absolutely.
First.
And guess what? There's a thinking that we know that the Democrats are thinking that all of these illegals and all of their friends are Democrat voters, and they kind of are. They come from very socialist totalitarian backgrounds. That's what they know. Their assumption is that the government controls things. That's what they prefer because it's what they're familiar with. And so, yes, when they come here, they are very pro-Democrat big government. And the friends of theirs that are able to vote legally or effectively, whichever way, their friends are going to vote Democrat because big government is what they're about. Well, what's a better way to convert them into being small government than by proving to them and showing to them that as soon as they come to America, it's not the government that feeds them. It's individuals who feed them and take care of them. How about that for putting the proof in, you know, the proof is in the pudding that here in America, it's not the government that takes care of you, it's each other that takes care of you, and the whole small government thing is the right way to go. If we ever want to have the conservative libertarian philosophy win, we have to prove it as being effective. Right?
It's the difference between saying, I need to do something about that problem, and saying, somebody needs to do something about that problem. Mm-hmm. We need to quit pawning it off on somebody.
Yeah. And Glenn Beck is that somebody, and now they're stepping forward to be that somebody, and they're getting slammed by our side?
Right, because the usual default to the somebody is government.
Because that, you know, that just, that whole American Thinker article ticks me off the more I think about it. But other than, you know, Jean-Pierre runs his own blog, but Fishy and JD and I and Ryan, we're all on group blogs. Not every single article published on our website do we agree with 100%. So I can't decide that American Thinker is bad just because they had that one article I disagree with. I'm just going to say, M. Catherine Evans, I disagree with you at that moment in that article. I may agree with M. Catherine Evans on some future article, but this one article, that's crazy cakes.
Crazy cakes is a way of putting it, but yeah, absolutely. I'm sure that Miss Evans and us have lots in common as far as issues that we share a common stance on immigration, for crying out loud. She shares the same stance that we have and that Dana Loesch has as far as the idea that amnesty is a bad idea and that we shouldn't have it. That's the thing that is so preposterous about this whole thing, is she's attacking somebody who has the same exact ideas as she does. It's mind-boggling from that in that respect. But since we're coming around to the end part of the show, And since Ryan missed the early bit when we got to ask Jean-Pierre some questions, I'm sure it's getting late for Jean-Pierre as well. I would love it, Ryan, if you have some more questions for Jean-Pierre, or if anyone else has some questions, maybe some questions from the chat, and then we'll give. I think it would be good if we give Jean-Pierre a open mic to, talk about what he wants to talk about, and then we'll wrap up. That would be if that would be acceptable to everyone.
Okay. So my main question I wanted to hear your answer to, and sorry if this was asked before I joined, how have you come to kind of change your messaging going from where you were to the way that you're going now? Because I've been changing over the course of the last couple of months, but I'm wondering kind of how you came to that, if it's been slowly, if it's been over time, if there's been any specific people who've influenced you or things like that.
Yeah, that's an interesting question because it's hard for me to put down like an actual like date or maybe like a period of a month where I was kind of like started to really just start focusing on changing my how I crafted my message and everything. I know that I started thinking this way. I mean, thinking differently and trying to craft what I believed in a different way. Before I went to college, it grew significantly while there. But I think one thing that really helped was my, and I mentioned this in the beginning, my anarcho-capitalist friend. In the beginning when we met, this was at school, the two of us didn't really, we were kind of, it was like kind of our parents were like, met each other and were like, hey, you guys have the same thing in common, you're into politics. And so we're like, kind of like, okay, so we kind of sheepishly met each other and didn't really know what the other believed totally. So like the first thing I remember him saying was that he was into Ron Paul. At that point, I wasn't really into Ron Paul, so I was kind of like, okay. And over that, and for the next like year, whenever we discussed politics, it was more of a aggressive, confrontational manner. Because both of us, I had never really come across an anarcho-capitalist before. So this was like treading new water, and I was like, what the heck is an anarcho-capitalist? And why would you even believe in that? So our first year, our relationship was rocky, and we didn't really get along that easily, politically wise. Somewhere after that, I don't know how, but we decided subconsciously or consciously that we had more things in common than divided us. And so after that, I mentioned this earlier, but we would just go to Starbucks and talk for like 4 hours straight about politics, tech stuff. It really didn't matter, mostly politics, and we just hash out theories and whatnot. So I think that was the beginning of where I started to kind of see how I could connect with people who didn't believe exactly what I believed, and also craft a message and talk to people on issues that in a way that we could connect on it and not always have to be confrontational to people. Last semester, my first semester at college, I really started working on this a lot more. It just became more apparent to me when I looked at all the students that were there and how they treated other people of different political beliefs, even like very similar. Like I'll mention this at the end, but especially their treatment of libertarians, like it shocked me. Like I was surprised how their reaction to libertarians, it didn't make sense to me at all. I think this is partially just because I've made friends with anarcho-capitalists and I like libertarians in general. So that was really a shocker to me, and that really opened my eyes to that we need to stop being so close-minded politically, and not in a way like our beliefs are being challenged or anything, but just accepting more people into the fold that are not 100% what we believe, and also if they're not 100% what we believe, not getting all pissy at them and freaking out and being aggressive and confrontational, and knowing that you can disagree, okay, heck, you can disagree about the role of the state or if the state should exist, but you can still discuss 95% of the issues and agree on them, which is what me and my anarcho-capitalist friend do, like, all the time. So, yeah, that's answering your question right there.
Good answer. I think we should probably just if you wanna give us a closing statement, if you wanna get some stuff off of your chest here that you want to let people know, and definitely remember to mention your website and all that and your social networks and all of that stuff at the end. So go for it.
Okay. I'll just focus on this one. My experiences at college, what I mentioned about my fellow peers and their reactions to libertarians. So there was this one incident in the cafeteria towards the end of the semester that really like opened my eyes to the fact that how bigoted many of the conservatives there were towards libertarians in general. So three of the guys that I'm rooming with next year, we joke around a lot as guys, friends do. And we had had some political discussions. Remember, these are the theonomists, two of them at least. And so we had been joking around politically. And then in a cafeteria during lunch on a Saturday, we were sitting down with a bunch of other freshmen. And one of the guys just leans over and says, "So, Jean-Pierre, I hear you're a libertarian now." And he was joking with me, like, I knew he was joking, and I started laughing at it immediately. But everybody else didn't know, and literally some people were shocked, and some people were like, "What?" in a very shocked and surprised manner. And that I was like, "Wait, is it?" They were like worried, like seriously worried that I was a libertarian. I'm like, "Why is that such an issue? It's not like I'm going to kill anybody. I mean, if it take a liberal over a libertarian, I mean, libertarians are much better. I mean, they are nice people." And so that really shocked me. Another thing was there were very few libertarians on campus. This is a campus of 400 people at most. But still, I could probably count the number of libertarians on my hand, one of which was a senior, and he didn't talk much anyway. So one time during lunch, I was sitting next to him, and I just turned towards him like, "So I hear you're a libertarian, right?" And he looked at me kind of a little weary, like, what is your end goal here?" And he's like, "Yes." And I'm like, "That's cool. That's nice. You know, I'm glad to meet another libertarian." He's like, "Oh, okay." Like, he was surprised that I was open about it and very accepting.
Like, he came out of the closet as a libertarian.
Yeah. And so he was really shocked. And so I'm just like, "Hey, I like libertarians. I'm not, I don't consider myself a libertarian. Some people do consider me a libertarian, but whatever. No, I'm fine with you guys." And I asked him something about students here and how they treat libertarians, and he's like, "Yeah, we're kind of a persecuted group here." And I'm like, "Wait, what? Like, the conservatives here like persecute you?" And I'm sure it's nothing significant like what you would find at Berkeley.
It's not like wedgies and swirlies or anything, but
no, and it's not crazy. It's just a superficial, for lack of a better word, bigotedness, that libertarians are fine with gays existing, or, you know, they're very, "You do what you want to do, I'll leave you alone, just don't try to take what's mine, and don't try to violate anybody else's rights or freedoms or property."
Yeah.
And so to some conservatives, that's a little, that freaks them out. It's like what you were mentioning before with liberals, where it's like either you're against illegal immigration or you help kids at the border. It's that kind of same thing. Either you're against gays and you want to put laws in that control or regulate their lives to some degree, or you're totally for gays and you're totally for gay marriage and blah, 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 blah. you're a heathen, you're destroying our society. Not all of them believe that, but I have seen little threads of that here and there. Like, okay, in class, in history class, several of the students, probably at least five, and there was probably at least at most 20 of us in this class, at least five of them said that they, A, wanted to prohibit alcohol again, and B, criminalize adultery, and probably somebody said something about gays. After hearing that, that literally freaked the crap out of me.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was completely shocked that, hey, who wants to ban alcohol anymore? Like, seriously. Nobody has read anything about the prohibition. And then also that they would use the government as kind of their club to beat other people.
So totalitarianism is fine as long as I'm the one in charge.
Yeah, that's basically it. Or I don't want liberals controlling people's lives, but as long as I'm the one in control, then it's fine.
Yikes! That's big government conservatism, and that's the that scares me worse than most anything.
Yeah, I know. And not only did I find that disgusting on a term of politically and like and rights and everything, I found it very anti-Christian and very misguided on how Christians should act politically and socially. So that all, like, I went on a rant in class. Even the professor was saying some stuff that I was very like, nope, 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 nope. And so that whole...
So did you pass the class or did you fail?
Barely passed. not
See,
for
the
that
rebel
reason.
Speaking out as a tiny little college. You go, man, you go.
Thanks. But so those two situations and a few others really opened my eyes to how divided the right can be in general.
Yeah.
Like, I consider conservatives, libertarians, and even anarcho-capitalists to be on the same side, more or less. And so that really comes through in my writing and me talking to people and interacting with people. And so I really don't have a problem with, you know, libertarians being here or whatever. I don't think libertarianism is anything to be worried about. Nope. But what I saw on campus a few times really shocked me and disgusted me. You're going to say something?
That sounds kind of freaky, because I don't want to believe that totalitarians exist on the right as much as they do on the left. You know, intellectually I know they do, but I think I would freak out if I met them. I'm glad it's you, not me, that has to meet them and hang out with them in school. Because I'm with you. I think that the libertarian side of the world agrees with my version or my flavor of conservatism, and we would vote for the same people. And frankly, there aren't any successful libertarian candidates unless they are under the umbrella of the Republican Party. And I would like for libertarian type or libertarian guided candidates to be more successful than they are, and I want to welcome them into the Republican Party so that they can take over the Republican Party along with me and my kind of people. You know,
exactly. Yes.
I want the libertarians to come into the tent with me, and that means that we need to be friends with them. And there's a lot of anarcho-capitalism. Although, you know, getting them to vote is probably not going to happen.
But if as long as they're not agorists. If they're agorists, then they won't vote. But if they aren't, then they might. So.
Does everybody have to have their own little group name? Is that the deal now?
Yeah, can you define that?
Yes, but I'm not going to, because it would take another 3 hours of show.
Well, here's the response, I think. Of all tyrannies, a tyranny sincerely exercised for the good of its victims may be the most oppressive. It would be better to live under robber barons than under omnipotent moral busybodies. The robber baron's cruelty may sometimes sleep. His cupidity may at some point be satiated, but those who torment us for our own good will torment us without end, for they do so with the approval of their consciences. C.S. Lewis.
And that's why I am totally against theonomies. And that's another thing that really shocked me, was I didn't know what a theonomist was until I went to Patrick Henry. That's the college I'm at. I literally got there, and I was talking to one of the juniors in my wing in my dorm, and he was like, yeah, and there's a few theonomists here. I'm like, what the heck is a theonomist? And he's like, oh, yeah, that'll take some explaining. And after he explained that to me, I'm like, oh my gosh, like, why do people believe that? And what could lead them to? Obviously, of course, they think scripture backs it up. I totally disagree with them on that. But just the fact that there is a significant amount of theonomists on that campus just scares me a little bit of what they're teaching and how some kids can take it and turn the opposite way with what they're learning.
Although maybe it's comforting and one can think that every single theonomist in the entire world is going to Patrick Henry College, so if there are 10 there, there's only 10 in the world.
Yeah, but I have to deal with all of them.
Well, yeah, sucks for you. Wait, that wasn't very sympathetic of me, was it? Okay, I'm working on that.
You are not alone, though, with dealing with those theonomists. I'm not going to say that the people that I've engaged with at CPAC a few times are theonomists, because I don't know enough about the word theonomist to effectively apply the term. But suffice it to say, there is a subset of people that show up to conservative groups. I'm not going to call them conservatives because of that aforementioned desire to sort of wield government as a club. I don't think that that's something that's particularly conservative or something that's Republican to do. So, it's hard to apply those terms there. As much as they might want to be Republicans or be conservatives, I don't know that that's a label that particularly fits. It's one of those square and rectangle situations. Reverse that. Anyway, we're pretty much done. We are at the end of the 2 hours.
At the end of their broadcast day. I do think that one of the important messages that you just made me think of, since the theonomists are at Patrick Henry are young and politically active, and you've run into that same mentality at CPAC, which means they are politically active and engaged and they have positions of influence within the party, that means that we need two of us to outnumber every one of them. And we tend to be less politically active because we're just going about our daily lives and we're not as determined to control the world via our theology. You know, three live and let live guys are easily defeated by one determined totalitarianism. You know, one of them. You know, one guy who's really determined to control your life can do so because he's going to apply his money and his position and his influence to control you, whereas you just want to be left alone. So I think it is, we do need to learn about these guys and realize that they exist because we need to overpower them and outnumber them.
The good news is that if they are the same guys that I recognize from CPAC, they might just be in it for the fashion statement. Do they wear fabulous red capes?
Oh, what?
Fabulous red capes.
As soon as we get Free Radical Network up and running again, that will make sense, and that link will appear in the description so that you can understand exactly what red folks have to do with busybody moralists.
And it's,
I need
it's
to
like
know all about Kate.
End cap. It's the perfect end cap, because in that article that I wrote 2 years ago, a year ago, it also talks about a pretty... well-known anarcho-capitalist. So it's just all sewn up.
Awesome. So it can all tie together. That's great. Yeah. Okay. Well, I would be remiss if I did not mention the artwork behind JD's head, which is The Conservative Insurgency by Kurt Schlichter, right there. See, there you go.
I'm going to speak now, so that's my picture that shows up, so that you can actually see the cover this time. Because last time I brought the cover up, but I didn't speak, so you couldn't really see what the cover looked like, but that's what the cover looks like, and I got two. So one is on my wall, and one is in my hands.
Yay! Kurt Schlichter, buy the book. And thank you very much to our guest, John-Pierre Maley, and his website is thepoliticalinformer.com, and he is one of us as far as guys who understand that the messaging needs to be less violent, less confrontational, and more bring people into the tent. Because if we're gonna take over the world, we can only do so by being nice and the kind of people that other people want to be with and be like. So thank you very much for joining us, John-Pierre, and thank you everybody for joining us in the chat. We had new chat software today. There's either the Java or the Flash or the HTML interface with that little chat window, and if you choose the Java window, it does want to install Java for you, but the benefit of using the Java version is that you can pop it out into a separate window or something like that. It's going to take a little more time for us to experiment with this little different type of chat that JD discovered this week. I like it very much, and also, we will see you guys next week, next Tuesday, 9:30 Eastern, 8:30 Texas time, and that will be it. Everybody say goodbye.
1 second. Thank you, guys. Wait. By the way, thanks everybody in the audience for making this past week the best week that we've had for the Refinery yet. We had a ton of views and clicks and likes and subscribers and all sorts of cool stuff, so... if you like what you're seeing, subscribe to the YouTube channel, The Conservative Union, and like and share our videos, because they will be coming out shortly, and they'll be one every day for the next few days or so. So be on the lookout and check them out, because we enjoy doing them, and hopefully you guys get something from it.
They're awesome. The snippets are the best part of the week, actually, because it's like, oh yeah, that was really great. Oh, I remember when Fishy said that was brilliant. Oh yeah, and there's always something to laugh at. Anyway, thank you guys very much. We'll see you all next week.
Brilliant.
Bye.